Welcome to this podcast in which we will be providing a brief overview of business impacts on the right to mental health and how this links with your business and human rights commitments. My name is Lauriane Leneveu and I am a manager with GBI. These podcasts are created to help scale thinking on emerging business and human rights topics and to provide resources to share emerging thought leadership in the business and human rights field with your colleagues. I'm here today with Jo Reyes. For those who don't know her, she is Chief Operating Officer here with us at GBI, and she was one of the organization's founders back in 2009. Jo, welcome.
Thanks, Lauriane. Great to be with you.
So, Jo, many companies have had mental health policies and processes in place for years. Those are often administered through the health and safety and human resources functions. So why should business and human rights practitioners and company be focusing on mental health too?
So that is very true, but I think not many companies are using the lens of business and human rights and the UNGPs to guide their approach to mental health, either internally in the workplace or externally, to look at and assess any possible negative mental health impacts of their products, operations and services. And for those who aren't, I think there's potentially a big gap there, as there is a lot which mental health can reveal about the human rights impacts of a company, as well as there being positive impacts of getting mental health right for rights holders.
I would like to ask you, if this is a challenging area for human rights practitioners and companies, how do you think it will be for them to gain traction with colleagues on that issue?
It's also an area where, whilst it's difficult to sometimes identify what the ultimate risk or impact might be, it's really easy to articulate how this is a risk to people. And so in terms of understanding and of communicating the human rights side of this, it should quite quickly and easily resonate with colleagues and company boards.
And why do you think practitioners should focus on mental health?
I think this lack of attention has come into very sharp focus during the COVID-19 pandemic, and we now know that there are many compelling reasons to involve human rights practitioners in discussions on mental health. And since mental health is a human right, it should be considered under the responsibility to respect all human rights within your business's operations. So it should very much be on the radar of every human rights practitioner.
How big an issue is this, do you think?
As you alluded to, Lauriane, at the beginning, before the pandemic, mental health was already an issue receiving increasing attention. And we can see that mental ill health has been rising in all regions, and it's also moved steadily up the global burden of disease indices. I know of at least one study in the US which rather alarmingly shows work to be and not only the number one cause of stress, with around a quarter of the working population claiming severe stress through work, but 61% stating that workplace stress made them physically ill, and 7% of those were hospitalised due to psychological impacts. And that was pre-pandemic, right? And we know the strain is even greater now.
Can I also ask you, what kinds of incentives or pressures are there to increase companies' attention to mental health?
As well as these kinds of incentives to prevent poor mental health in the workplace, I think companies are going to be needing to add way more focus as governments are increasingly thinking about and starting to regulate and guide companies in this area more, as the impact of increased mental illness starts to strain public resources to bursting point. And I think companies are increasingly realising that poor mental health can significantly affect operations, not just through days lost to illness. It can also significantly damage company reputations, and it can present some very complex challenges to the provision of effective remedy, which maybe we can touch on a little bit more detail later on. But as the focus increases, I think it's important for human rights practitioners to be part of the discussions internally to ensure their company really understands the nuances which this complex area brings for respecting human rights in your operations, and for practitioners to really understand how mental health interacts and runs across other human rights issues and responsibilities.
So on that, other than the impacts we saw during COVID, what else should companies be aware of?
I think we've seen a number of headline examples over recent years and even months aside from the pandemic. So looking further back, we had the tragic worker suicides at Foxconn and France Telecom. We saw suicide in the agricultural sector and other complex supply chains where mental pressures can become extreme and are linked to financial failures, but also in white collar jobs, the banking industry during the financial crash, and increasingly reports on the legal profession as well. But then we also have mental health impacts from incidents. So reports on the mental health impact of the Rana Plaza collapse, for example, are in the wake of high profile oil spills around actual and perceived mental health impacts of toxicity and of loss of way of life for subsistence communities. And I think the one on most people's minds right now is likely to be around Facebook, Instagram and other social media platforms now being under extreme scrutiny in relation to the truly tragic teen suicides, online bullying and harassment, issues around portrayal of body image, race, sexual identity, etc., with the potential to lead to some very severe impacts, including depression, suicides, eating disorders and self-harm. So way off the scale of the positive mental health position the WHO and UN see as the sort of lowest bar, and way, way off from the broader, more enabling conception of good mental health under the right to mental health, which they promote. And I think there's one more layer of complexity. We also know that the act of prevention of adverse human rights impacts can themselves have further unintended mental health impacts. So here we're talking about the mental impacts experienced, for example, by Microsoft and Facebook workers responsible for monitoring images of graphic and disturbing detail online to protect the public and protect those whose images are portrayed and report to relevant authorities, etc. Also talking about company auditors sent into the field and potentially witnessing some very distressing and difficult situations. And I know this is something our advisor Rishi has been looking at also. And also workers and employees being sent into complex contexts such as conflict zones, ensuring that their mental health considerations are taken into account in those posting choices that the company is making, but also to ensure that they are the right people to respect the rights and the mental health of those who they encounter within the communities and operations in which they're working in these very difficult circumstances. And last but by no means least, the mental health of human rights practitioners. We know that there is huge strain, often very limited capacity and enormous reliance, and a lot of responsibility and stress that goes with what you do. So again, this prevention of human rights impacts having further unintended impacts on mental health.
Coming to this deeper complexity and understanding with the human rights lens, what kind of things should practitioners bear in mind?
So two key things I think are important to remember. First of all, it's that those with mental ill health are classed as vulnerable and therefore are afforded additional protections under international human rights law. And second, the positive promotion of both mental health and of human rights are very much mutually reinforcing. I think it's important to appreciate that mental ill health should also be understood as an impact caused by other human rights harms, and that much of international human rights law and guidance is now based on an understanding that mental health affects human rights and the ability to effectively access human rights, and that human rights abuses affect mental health. And we've witnessed impacts like this in cases of sexual harassment, of excessive working hours, and in adverse impacts by business on communities, just for example. So identifying mental health issues, whether that's internally or externally, can be an important sort of indicator or flag for concern for other human rights risks in your company, as well as being a risk in and of itself. And I think with the pandemic, the business and human rights world more broadly has begun to consider mental health impacts, but some companies have made more progress than others in the maturity of their thinking and understanding the scope and actually acting in this area. So some companies we know have made significant progress in thinking about mental health at work, establishing worker wellbeing programs, thinking about the impact of depression or anxiety disorders on sickness, and understanding the links to stress-related illness like strokes and heart attack. And some companies have also thought about their impact on mental health on communities in which they operate or of their products or services. And others still have needed to address mental health in the context of remediation for human rights harm. I think some of the trickier challenges for us around this whole area are identifying mental health issues and establishing causation to prevent exacerbation and repetition. And I think this identification and causation is notoriously difficult to discover and prove because of the subjective nature of how mental health impacts are experienced by individuals. And perceptions vary by context, by culture, and by other surrounding factors as well. But I guess the good news, if there is any, is that there are obviously credible diagnoses, but also useful risk proxies exist, which have been borne out in research and in findings in the courts. And these can very much help guide or alert companies, at least, to potential risks.
Could you give us an example here?
Sure. So, for example, we know that poor working conditions and substandard accommodation, long working hours, lack of contact with family, linguistic or cultural isolation, harassment, discrimination, etc. These are all triggers, and a potential accumulation of any number of these for an individual worker will increase the likelihood of poor mental health. And in relation to external impacts outside the company through products, services and operations, mental health impacts are also highly complex, particularly where dealing with large communities, including online communities, as we're seeing in the case of Facebook and Instagram. But as we've seen in those cases, it's not too remote to identify the risks and issues associated and link significant harm to the companies and cause significant reputational damage also.
So what do you think companies can gain by looking at mental health through their human rights function?
Well, companies with a more sophisticated understanding of human rights know that bringing a human rights lens to challenges can help understand the more nuanced issues, which can really help tackle problems much more systemically. And this is very much the case in relation to mental health, where complex challenges relating to culture and context mean that imposing popular psychological process and practices adopted from the country in which you're headquartered and imposing these in other geographies as part of your mental health provision for employees, say, can have an adverse impact and be ineffective, inappropriate, or potentially even damaging. Or if you're installing processes to identify and deal more transparently with mental health issues in areas where this is still a very large taboo, this could result in individuals being ostracised, stigmatised, excluded or humiliated, and further exacerbate the issues for that individual. So there needs to be consideration also whether the treatment or process is truly sensitive and unbiased to the individual's race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender, other predispositions or mental pre-existing mental health conditions. So there's no one size fits all across your international operations. There needs to be culturally and context sensitive thinking centered on the individual around poor mental health identification, around risks and around provision of remedy as well.
You mentioned the complexity around remedy, and I wonder if you could maybe elaborate on that. Do you mean remedy for mental health harms?
Yeah, that's a great pickup. So in relation to remedy, the implications for mental health of victims are, I think, twofold. We could be talking about remedy for mental harm and the complexities that this might involve in relation to effective remedy. And I think that's what most companies are familiar with through litigation and other internal processes. But we're also possibly talking about the potential for mental harm caused by the process of obtaining remedy for human rights harms. There are already key remedial principles set in international standards, in the UNGPs and in the UN Working Group's Report on Remedy and the OHCHR's Accountability and Remedy Project as well, which all state the core principle of causing no further harm in the process of remedying the initial violation. Now, we know from other areas of remedy like transitional justice and through litigation that risks to the victim in the process of seeking remedy might include things like re-traumatisation or triggering of PTSD, stigmatisation or ostracisation, re-victimisation, stress and anxiety, complexities around what we term elongated victim narratives in prolonged internal or legal processes, and mental impacts of provision of culturally inappropriate remedy. So companies need to be very mindful of mental health in how they provide remedies, particularly if this is through your internal grievance mechanisms and processes or in out-of-court settlements where maybe there might be less protections for victims than we see in some judicial processes. I think also the understanding that there are elements of remedy that particularly link to the mental health of the victim, such as victim impact statements, apologies, guarantees and non-repetition, the potential positive impacts of those should be understood by companies in addition to financial and other forms of remedy outside of judicial processes particularly. Negative impacts of certain forms of remedy should also be understood, I think, such as the mental impacts of a non-disclosure agreement on an individual or specifying the wrong sort of psychological support in a settlement that might end up being damaging to the victim. So, in summary, I really think that effective remedy can't ignore the mental health of the victim, and that needs to be considered throughout the process of obtaining remedy.
What would be your top level talking point?
Good question, right. Well, I guess mental health is a huge challenge for business, but it's not one that can be ignored. And companies, I think, learnt that to their cost to some extent during the pandemic, if not before. And because of its cross-cutting nature, adopting a human rights lens to mental health and a mental health lens to human rights can bring about a real understanding of the impacts and risks, as well as the potential wins for the business and for rights holders when we get things right. And I think if we really want to try and understand impact or the impact of a human rights abuse, I think ultimately when we ask ourselves how an individual victim experiences a negative human rights impact, do they experience that impact physically, maybe financially, possibly, but psychologically, almost certainly so. And I think knowing that potential for the impact on psychological health, we should be placing a much clearer focus on mental health as having the potential to both identify and ameliorate adverse human rights risks and improve effectiveness of remedy for business-related human rights harms.
Thank you for shedding some light on these issues. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening from where you are.